Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. Very glad to have you with us. My name is Colin. I'm here, as I always am, with Dom. Dom, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm very well, and we are back today to talk some more Survivor, and actually, just right off the top, we were originally planning on having our good buddy Jay Fisher in here this week, but we thought, you know, with the merge coming next week, that we would be better off having his insights then. Very much looking forward to that, so he's going to be joining us after the next episode. But yeah, I don't even think we have much to be getting into before we get into the actual new episode this week, right? Unless you have anything.
No, I'm good, I think.
Yeah, sure. So last time we swapped and we lost Brad Culpepper and Kat got voted out. And this episode, we're not going to soon forget that Kat got voted out because it opens with about 20 minutes of Kat and Hayden here. And Kat, right off the bat, is still very concerned that Hayden is going to break up with her because he's ashamed of her poor performance on this season. And she genuinely seems to believe that no one actually would want to date someone who makes the merge.
Yeah, it's as much as we like to poke fun of Kat and stuff like this, it's actually kind of refreshing to see, like, a level of sincere emotion from both her and Hayden that we really haven't seen before. Like, we've seen Kat, like, break down when she gets blindsided or when pretty much anything happens, actually. But, you know, Hayden's someone who, throughout Big Brother 12, is always able to stay very emotionally composed. And he's someone who, you know, that's one of his defining qualities as a player of games like these. He's always able to keep his emotions in check. And so to see him, you know, to see that side of him is actually kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I've ever seen Hayden cry before this episode. And, we can question the validity of those tears because I thought there were some that may have been a little bit put on. But I think this actually kind of speaks to one of the advantages of Redemption Island seasons. There are very few advantages to RI seasons. But I think this is one of them, which is after someone gets voted out, you do get to see that real reaction and how it impacts their loved one becomes a storyline in these Blood versus Water Redemption Island seasons. Yeah, so let's fast forward now to Redemption Island, and this is going to be some good stuff, because I know, Dom, I was thinking for sure that Kat was going to want to swap in with Hayden and do what she could to get him to swap in for her, and obviously Hayden is not going to want to do that, because Hayden is someone who likes winning and success and money and so forth. So let's talk about the idea, you know, the scene we saw of them deciding whether or not Hayden was going to be swapping in for Kat here, and I thought Hayden did a great job deflecting what may have been a pretty insane idea by Kat. I should remove may have been. It was definitely, they're better off with Hayden in the mix there. So what'd you make of how Kat attempting to get him to swap and him deflecting?
Yeah, and I'll say at the start, I've generally been avoiding Kat's ex interviews just because I don't trust her to keep her mouth shut about anything. But apparently in one of them she said that not letting Hayden switch in for her was like the most selfless act she's ever done for someone or something like that, which, you know, she's just, Kat thinks in her mysterious ways, and, you know, and Hayden, I imagine at this point, is very adept at like getting into her head and figuring out what's going on up there, if indeed there is anything going on up there. But yeah, he did a fantastic job of like turning this around on her, making her see and like volunteer the he should be left in the game over her, and you know, it's, you wonder what would happen if she decided to push the issue a bit more, but then again, the fact that he, you know, is able to like pacify her in spots like this is probably why they're still together as a couple, right?
Right. Yeah, I think Hayden definitely would have anticipated as he was going into that Redemption Island, like she's going to want to swap, and I don't want to do that. We're far better off with me in the game. And I think, once again, he did a great job deflecting this with the line of, you know, what's best with for you and I long term. I would, you know, who has a better chance to win? And I'm curious what you think about her then, you know, crying and saying, oh, you know, you have a better chance to win. You're such a good player and so much and so forth. What did you make of that? Does that hurt Hayden at all in your eyes?
I don't think it does. Like, I don't think this is coming as news to anyone. She's pretty much just telling them things they already knew. And, you know, for people there who maybe hadn't met Hayden yet, it only serves to act as like a reminder of, or not a reminder, I guess, I mean, an introduction to just what type of person he is. And obviously, you can't really trust it fully, given that it's coming from his girlfriend, but, you know, I don't think this is going to hurt him in any way.
Yeah, it shouldn't be news to anyone that Hayden is someone who is good at these kind of games. Yeah, and one other thing. Hayden, as it went to commercial break, as he was about to make this decision, you know, of course we were live tweeting, where you can follow us, at Colin Stone and at MC_Usher. Hayden tweeted out that this was one of the toughest decisions. So don't laugh at my whoring. Hayden tweeted out that this was one of the toughest decisions I've ever had to make. You buying that at all, Dom?
Bullshit. This is the easiest decision he's made in his life. Like, there's no way he was swapping in there. I don't care if Kat threatened to walk out on the spot. There's no way Hayden was stepping down from that bench.
Yeah, I completely agree. And then after, you know, Kat would go on to lose the duel, and I, you know, we'll be talking about the duel, I think, shortly, and she was still very concerned that he was going to break up with her over it. What would you make of this, if anything? If not, we can just move on.
Well, it's weird. I mean, psychoanalyzing Kat isn't really going to get us anywhere, but, you know, it's I have to think that that kind of paranoia about how that's going to be received is going to be far more damaging to their relationship if it is than one of them not swapping in on Redemption Island or one of them getting voted out or whatever. Like, why? You know, who cares about that?
Yeah, no, I think it's Kat. You know, what kind of podcast would we be if we weren't playing armchair psychologist every week? I think it's Kat just kind of generally insecure about the entire relationship because she knows how good Hayden is at things, and she knows Hayden could probably go find another girlfriend if he were so inclined.
Yeah, like, we don't really pry into their relationship much, but it's just so weird because Hayden seems like, as much as he has this kind of jockish exterior, he does seem to be like a serious person who could just be more successful in that regard if he wanted to. And I'm not sure if Kat is just some, like, not a stopgap because I think that is kind of demeaning, but, you know, it just seems weird for this to be like a long-term thing for either of them.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? It easily could be. I think Kat, at least in Kat's mind, and I'm sure in Hayden's mind, at least at the moment, it certainly could become a very long-term thing. It definitely strikes me as at least somewhat odd. So, as mentioned, Kat loses this Redemption Island duel. I don't know what we want to talk about as far as the duel is concerned, other than that it was the same puzzle that Cochran won, and Cochran got his obligatory shout-out, which I'm sure made him happy.
Yeah, do you think they did this puzzle just so they could get that shout-out in there?
Not just so they could get the shout-out in, but I'm sure once they did this puzzle, Jeff Probst knew immediately he was going to give the shout-out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Kat loses. I guess let's stay on Kat for a little while. Kat's, of course, been, this was her return appearance on Survivor after having played on One World. Parting thoughts on Kat here. What did you make of her performance this season, and what do you make of Kat as her Survivor legacy is thus far? And perhaps, you know, we'll talk about whether or not she'll be back.
Okay, I will confess that I was very happy to see this, if for no other reason than when Alyssa Riley was reported to have given out Season 27 spoilers on the Big Brother live feeds, I'd heard Kat's name mentioned in some kind of context there, where it's like, it implies that she's somewhere there in the late game, even if she's not in, you know, in the finals or whatever. So to see that disproven, or at least, you know, not have that weighing on my mind is a good thing, at least. I don't know, like, Kat, I think you get what you expect with Kat, right? She's going to flip. I think her first season, maybe she overperformed above expectation. You know, even making it to the merge is going to be an achievement for her a lot of the time. She's just not someone who can really, like, you know, she's, okay, you can trust her to provide some funny moments and stuff, but beyond that, like, you know, you can't really expect any more. You know.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying, which is her performance in One World, I honestly think was, like, best-case scenario for Kat, which is maybe not best-case scenario, because I could see her being, like, a losing finalist in a perfect world, but she's certainly not, like, an actual Survivor player. She's never going to win the game. And I think getting those kind of, like, classic Kat moments where she gets to be goofy and weird and funny and cute and so forth, and gets to have kind of her experience extend for as long as it realistically and reasonably could within the game, courtesy, I think, of Kim last time, is about what the best Kat can hope for. And I know she thinks she could go on and win Survivor and so forth. She obviously can't. And I think she'd be lucky if she gets to come back again, and would be lucky in that instance if it played out as well as it did for her in One World ever again, if she gets to play Survivor again.
Yeah. So speaking of Kim, actually, this was... Kat had a secret scene this week where, you know, she's on Redemption Island and she gets her luxury item. And it turns out her luxury item is a picture of her and Kim, which... I mean, for all of you who ever had a shred of doubt about how great Kim Sebastian is, the fact that someone is, like, having a memento of her on an entirely different season. Like, no one's getting a picture of Dan Giesing in an HOH basket. Like, you don't find this with anybody else. Like, Kim is just, like, unsurpassed in that regard. The fact that she's just, I don't know, it's kind of, if you could, like, bottle whatever she has and sell it to people, you'd be a rich man, because it's remarkable.
Right. As I've said before, I don't know what it is, but Kim Spradlin's got it. And what I took away from this secret scene is Kim Spradlin is the greatest player in reality history of all time, and it's not even close. Like, to blindside this girl in their original season, then get her to have, like, some life-changing transformation on Ponderosa, get her jury vote, get her post-game to think that you had no choice but to vote her out there, get her to entirely forgive you, and then upon her return appearance, her luxury item is a picture of she and you. That is ridiculous.
there's people out there who actually believe that Tyson has a better social game than Kim does, which it's like that detonating your mind for a moment.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's the thing that people actually believe. But we don't need to bring that in here.
Yeah, well, let me ask you then, Dom. Is Kat going to be back for a third shot? Because I don't think she can ever win the game, as I've said probably 3 or 4 times by now, but I don't think this is out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. I guess it depends on what format, what type of season they're going for, but the pool of eligible women who can come back to play again is just so low that she has to be in the running, even though she kind of bombed out this time around.
Do you think she even bombed out this time around? Because I think they got a lot of what they want. I know she as a player did, but from what they want when they're casting for a TV show, I think they got plenty out of Kat and Hayden.
How much airtime do you think Kat got over the total run of the season?
Not a ton. She had plenty of totally invisible episodes, and then she basically got voted out. But I think they don't really care about that. What they want is for Kat and Hayden to get that 2 or 3 episode arc out of them just before Kat invariably goes.
Okay, but if Kat's there so that she can supply them with Hayden, then that doesn't bode well for her chances to come back, because I assume Hayden wouldn't be there with her again. So,
okay. Do you think Hayden has a better chance of coming back than Kat?
It's quite possible. I mean, it would have to depend on how things develop post-merge, I think. But, yeah, although...
He's competing with the same spot as, like, Malcolm, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, Hayden is just so easily replaceable, though. And, I mean, he's a fantastic candidate for that spot, but there are just so many people in the running there.
Yeah, and Hayden obviously is not the most entertaining guy in confessionals for a young, dominant alpha male who's really good at these games. Like, the beauty of Hayden's game is how subtle it is, and I think that doesn't translate well to... camera, especially when you only have 13 or 15 episodes instead of 33.
Right, and I think so far, people who are having their first experience of Hayden on this season wouldn't think of him in those terms as like one of the all-time greats or as someone who you would want to see coming back again at the moment.
Yeah, I buy that. I guess it's just like, if it had never been for Big Brother, I certainly wouldn't have even asked the question.
Yeah, like, if you hadn't seen Big Brother before, why would you have Hayden as your first choice over Caleb, per se?
Well, Caleb, I think, is a weird example to use there, because Caleb's been totally invisible these last couple episodes. Although, maybe that's a fair point. Like, Caleb is a more entertaining, more captivating Survivor player and has much more potential to be a long-term character.
Sure, but that's by design, I think. Like, at this point, I don't think Hayden stands out from the pack in any way.
No, I agree. I think it was just the circumstances that are why he got so much airtime this episode. Yeah. So let's actually talk a little bit about the Redemption Island duel, and I want to hear your stance on copying the person next to you.
Do it? I mean, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, if it's within that, it's not a lot to discuss here.
If you play a game.
Yeah, if they're going to let you do it, go ahead and do it. So John gives the clue that, John wins the duel again.
Somebody made a really good point, which is, if you think back to One World, where the women's tribe all copied off the guy's puzzle, they had no problem with, like, cheating then. So for them to, like, have some moral umbrage about it now, it rings a bit hollow.
Yeah, well, did you buy that Kat honestly felt like it was cheating, or did you think that it was, if she's going to do that, I'm going to lose anyway, and this way I'm going to look more honorable?
I think Kat had, like, an emotional reaction to it in the same way she does to pretty much everything. Like, I don't think Kat has some, like, deep-seated moral objection to what was going on. She just, she didn't like it because it wasn't benefiting her.
Yeah, all right, that's fair. So, as mentioned, John wins the duel, gives the clue to Monica yet again, and she burns it yet again. Anything we can make of this other than no one's telling them to stop doing that?
I mean, somewhere in the CPSR department, there's this poor, like, intern whose dreams have just been crushed every single episode. Like, sobbing in a corner somewhere.
My work's finally going to get on TV. No!
that valuable art degree for nothing. I don't know. Like, you have to imagine that the producers wanted the idols to be in play. Like, why else would they implement this twist? But I have to say, like, I'm really not missing it at all, actually.
No, who else isn't missing it? Future podcast guest Jay Fisher.
Yeah. I mean, it's... like, in general, I enjoy what idols bring to the game, but I don't enjoy what they bring to the show as it is at the moment, where it seems like every time an idol has to be in play, we get some like routine, monotone confessional talking about, well, this is how we're going to split the vote, or stuff like that. It's just become so like cookbook, as Ian would say at this point.
Right. It's kind of like no idols is the new idols. It's like having idols is becoming stale. Yeah. Yeah,
it reminds me of like Talking Teens or Big Brother 10, where it's like the absence of a twist becomes a twist.
Right, exactly.
It's just become so like saturated with them to this point where any kind of return to normality is seen as something different.
Right, and those were both phenomenal seasons because of, I think, those absence of twists. And this, obviously, no absence of twists whatsoever. But I like Idols would almost be overload at this point. I think, hopefully, the Redemption Island and Blood vs. Water twist, I think, just because there's so few pairs left and Redemption Island matters so little post-merge, that the Idols becoming factors post-merge is definitely the choice time. All right, so let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, we swapped last episode. Let's go over to the red team, which is the guys team and Sierra. And now Aris is doing mountain yoga, and he gets the fucking helicopter shot exactly like Vetus. And now I have no idea who to believe is the winner or what even that means.
Yeah, see, the problem with this, though, is that by itself, just completely out of context, this scene would have me, you know, going to Aris's culmination and declaring him the winner. As it is, though, when you set that side by side with Tyson's confessional saying that, let's see, we've got the quote here. Yeah, quote, "I thought Aris was playing a good game at first. Meditate all day if that's what you need. I think he's getting very comfortable and that fits into my game plan." You know, I get the sense of we're meant to buy into that, that we're supposed to think of Aris as being overconfident, right? Because typically, you know, when you have someone saying, quote, "I visualize Jeff's voice saying the winner of Blood versus Water, Aris," like that's, you know, that's a money quote right there. Here, though, like, it's meant as some kind of, like, ironic foreshadowing, I have to think.
Yeah, I think, absolutely, it's Aris. The mountain shot is not, oh, this is the guy appreciating his surroundings and situation and environment and the experience. It's, this guy's getting really comfortable, and now we, like, the close, I think you're exactly right with that Tyson quote is, Fran, I want to talk a little bit more about that, actually, which is Tyson really impressed me with this, where, you know, talking about how Aris being comfortable is exactly what he wants for his game plan. It demonstrates to me, at least, that we're meant to believe, if not that it's actually the case, that Tyson is very much thinking about what the other players are thinking about. And we've talked many, many times over the course of this podcast about that being a Survivor 101, like good Survivor 101.
Sure, but do you think Tyson's assumption of how Aris is thinking is actually accurate? Because he seems to be very paranoid that Aris is going to label him as a threat and come after him at the earliest opportunity. Whereas Aris just seems, like, blissfully unaware of that idea. He's just sitting there doing his own thing. I don't think it's even, like, crossed his mind to double-cross Tyson yet.
Well, I think this is kind of hitting on something we talked about a week or two ago, where this hit on Aris from Tyson is not something Aris can realistically expect, because I don't think it's necessarily the best game plan, at least pre-merge. And now, obviously, that changes drastically once we get to the merge, which we know we're going to get to next time. But I think if nothing else, and this is why I framed it this way initially, we're meant to believe that that's what the situation, that Tyson is really on the ball here, whether or not he is.
So call your shot here then. Do you think this is actually going to go through? Like, is Tyson going to be successful here? Successful in his own terms, right? Like, it might not be the best game move, but will he get his wish in the short term?
Gun to my head, yes or no, I would say yes.
Okay. Yeah, because we've seen this a lot where there's this this struggle between two centers of power, and it gets built up over time, and eventually that gets resolved. And, you know, we used the Philip and Corinne comparison last episode. One which occurred to me more recently was I was rewatching Palau, and in the pre-merge, they spent a lot of time on Kobe and Greg's plan to blindside Tom. But obviously, they never get a chance to go through or not go through with that because they never lose a challenge. But even so, that's like an undercurrent that's constantly referenced throughout the season. And so, obviously, that doesn't end up going in Kobe's favor. So I was wondering if maybe the same principle was kind of at work here. Then again, we never had that kind of parallelism showing Tom as unaware or as kind of deficient in his understanding of what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a very interesting comparison. I just think when we're already presented with the knowledge that the merge is happening next week, we're presented with the knowledge that this is still something that Tyson is very much interested in doing and that other people are at least pretending to support and perhaps support entirely. I feel like we have much more reason to believe that this may come in at the merge than we did in Palau with Karor not losing a challenge. So let's take a look at the new yellow team camp, where Tina now wants Vetus to marry Katie, and she says, the guy who gets Katie is going to have to hit her over the head with a club and drag her back to the cave, which means I'm going club shopping, and the first person I'm going to hit with the club is Vetus, just to take him off the table, and then I'm going to hit Katie, and then I might go and hit Colton just for fun.
Yeah, this was Yeah, this was vintage Tina, I think. Like, a lot of people, they kind of see Tina as, you know, maybe a bit humorless or whatever. Like, it's been a long time since we actually saw her get to play Survivor. But Tina, you know, she's quite smart, she's savvy, and she, you know, she knows how to give a good confessional.
Oh, totally. I'm loving Tina. I think Tina, is she creeping into your winner rankings at all? She's showing
no,
up
just because... Oh, yeah, but she wasn't showing up at the beginning. And, you know, again, two-time winner would have shown up a bit more. But game logic-wise, yeah, she's in a fantastic spot right now, I think.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, more on that later, of course. But, you know, I think if Tina... There are just so many ways it could play out where no one really notices that Tina's there or discounts as a threat. And then all of a sudden, you know, some of the ostensibly, quote-unquote, more threatening guys get taken out. And suddenly she's sitting there, you know, final eight, final seven, with a lot of people who are willing to be her allies, and she can just, you know, run the table from there.
Yeah, I think, you know, let's put a pin on this, because I think we have plenty more Tina coming up after the immunity challenge. One thing I definitely want to talk about before we get there, though, is Vitas now finally getting some confessionals about how deliberate his presentation of himself to the women is, you know, the other women on his tribe, and kind of how he's showing them what he wants them to see. I have the quote right now here. It was just a quote. I'm putting forward the parts of me that I want these women to see. Sorry for butchering it myself when I was paraphrasing.
Yeah, I mean, so I love this in Vitas. You know, I was thrilled to be watching this. Is this, like, for the general audience, though, is this meant to come off as negative? Because
I feel
like
so.
I'm not sure, because the women on this tribe so far, I think, have been edited as making maybe the wrong decisions in some cases, or at least, you know, I think Vitas has been shown as, you know, doing work to save himself and not just, you know, being saved by a stroke of good fortune. And so, you know, the fact that he has to manipulate in order to do that, I think, has to be shown if they're going to portray him in any kind of positive light. And so, in a weird way, it's like they have to show the negative parts to make him look positive.
Well, what about the previous Vitas edit up until this point? Because I think this was, as I saw it described, very much a heel turn for Vitas, to use like a wrestling reference, where, you know, a heel is like the bad guy in wrestling, where we're seeing kind of like the Brian Heidick side about how deliberate and calculated all of this is. And I don't think at all that that's meant to ingratiate the viewer with how Vitas is doing it. I think it's certainly for people like us, it's very much impressive and exactly the kind of mentality we like to see. But I think if I'm putting myself in the every viewer, every person's shoes, it's not the Vitas that I've been shown so far, and it's worse than the Vitas I've been shown so far.
Okay, sure, but we had Brian Heidick, we had Todd, we had, you know, Boston Rob took a negative turn at times. Like, he had that, soon after the merge, he had that general conventional where it's like, I'm running everything and these are all my puppets, and they had that body system thing which just looked very creepy. You know, I don't think some kind of possible cockiness or whatever is necessarily like an automatic thing that rules people out, but, you know, I think this is actually broadly consistent with what we've seen in the videos so far, which is, you know, this is a genuine part of who he is, and he understands that, and we get to connect with him and empathize with his story. But at the same time, he knows that he's in the game, and this is a valuable tool that he can use to get in good with these people, and so that's what he has to do.
I completely agree with that line of thought, and once again, this is totally impressive, nothing short of that to me. I just feel like, as far as what they expect the average viewer to be prioritizing, as far as what they want to see out of the people who do well, I think most people would have a more negative impression of Vitas after seeing this than certainly you or I do when compared to what we've seen out of him before. And I think that either means, one, we're seeing something like Boston Rob, where this is just going to be a masterclass on how to play Survivor, or two, we're meant to think that this is a negative turn for Vitas, and I think number two is far more likely.
Okay, but he's not doing this from a position of control, and therefore we get to see him as the underdog, right? So, like, what is he supposed to do? Just roll over and die? You know, if he has to lie and use parts of his personality that maybe he wouldn't want to use normally, then, you know, he's going to have to do that. It's not like he's lying for the sake of it or burning people just because he can. You know, he got swapped onto a tribe, and which is pretty unlucky for him, where, you know, he's outnumbered, you know, 4-1, 5-1, and he has to fight to stay alive.
Yeah, I definitely, like, I very much want to believe you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my point is, I think, in particular, the women who are watching this episode, most of them aren't thinking, oh, Vitas, what a horrible sexist for saying these things. They're thinking, oh, well, you know, good on Vitas, you know. I think a lot of them, I mean, he's an articulate, attractive guy who's clearly playing the game very well. I don't see why people would be necessarily drawn away from him at this point.
Okay, I guess your crush on Vetus aside, I think we're just misunderstanding. Both of us are certainly misunderstanding it. I think it's the disagreement here is just the degree to which we are misunderstanding the average viewer and what they intend to show to that viewer.
Well, I mean, it's not something where we can, like, draw upon heaps of evidence or anything. I mean, any evidence we have is going to be anecdotal. But, like, do you have reasons to believe that people are seeing him in a bad light?
No, I just think that it's far more likely that they are than it's likely that... Like, I believe it's far more likely that that is the intention of putting in these kind of, like, for lack of a better word, slime ball kind of scenes. And maybe that's me misrepresenting what these are. But then it is likely that this is us getting a masterclass from Vetus.
Okay, well, if we think back to the Philippines, where, you know, pre-season there was a ton of hype about Malcolm, and, you know, we bought into it and we were hoping he would be this kind of big villain or big anti-hero, and he turned out to just be, you know, this complete golden boy. And I think a lot of people looked at that and assumed, well, they could be showing him more negatively, they could be showing the more, like, acerbic, sarcastic side of his personality, and yet they're not. They're getting this completely, like, whitewashed, sanitized edit. And that has to mean good things of him. Ultimately, of course, it didn't. And so I have to wonder if there's something going on here, because Vetus, to me, is everything I wanted Malcolm to be. And so maybe that is clouding my judgment a little. But at the same time, you know, I don't think, like, this one-note positive edit is a requirement for someone like Vetus to do well.
Okay. I guess most of it remains to be seen. It's just I am, after being so high on Vetus, I feel like this is more of an indicator, at least for me, to come down on that a bit. But we'll certainly see how this plays out.
So if his edit takes a definitive negative turn over the next few episodes and it remains consistent like that, then okay, then yeah, I think you'll be right. But as it is, I don't think one episode where maybe he's arguably negative is a death knell for him.
No, I certainly don't think that it's a death knell by any means. I still will have Vetus at number one in my overall rankings. I just think it's a reason to come down much more so than a reason to remain neutral or even go up.
Sure. And before we move on, it's worth flagging up at this point that it's already abundantly clear that it's going to be either Laura B or Vetus. Like, no one else is going to really enter the boot discussion here.
Yeah, definitely. So whoever could have seen it coming, the red team wins immunity yet again, and the yellow team is off to tribal council, and now it looks like it's definitely going to be Laura B or Vetus in the hot seat, as we've said. And this is where the women go and tell Laura B that, hey, you know, if we do end up having to go back, or I guess now that we do have to go back, it's going to be Vetus, let's just be cool. And then Laura B goes and says in front of the entire group, hey, it's going to be Vetus. And there was some criticism that, hey, we should probably talk about this. And I suppose the order in which they showed the scenes doesn't really matter in this context. The women obviously felt off-put by it. But there was a theory put forward, Dom. I'm spacing now on by whom. But that the women already knew that Vetus was going to be the lock-safe person, and that this initial scene where they told Laura B that it would be Vetus was just paying lip service, really, to Laura B. And so what did you make of that, if anything?
Yeah, so a few people have thrown around theories about that maybe Tina was honoring some kind of deal she had with Aris, where they would keep each other's loved ones safe or something like that. In any case, it did seem kind of strangely edited, and a few people said in the moment that they thought this was already a done deal and this was just like a convenient way of packaging it and showing it to the audience. And I'm starting to buy that theory more and more, actually. Like, Vetus has said himself on Twitter that after that first vote where Kat was gone, he was pretty sure that he was going to be safe for future votes as well. So, you know, this whole Laura B thing, okay, that was a catalyst for her going home, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the final arbiter of that.
Yeah, and honestly, I guess we know now that we're merging next episode. I think if this yellow team had to go back to another tribal council, it probably would have been Monica going instead of Vetus.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. I mean, I guess we'll never get to know at this point, but yeah, I think that's certainly plausible.
Well, yeah, I guess it's just given that it's only going to be Katie and Tina and Monica and Vetus voting, I would expect either Vetus is going to go the first time he's eligible to go, or he's going to be safe through until Tina has to vote her daughter off.
Right, that's right. Because we were saying if it was correct to vote him out this week, it's correct to vote him out last week. You know, I think that logic's going to apply no matter when you're forced to make that decision. And so, you know, if you're keeping him once, you're probably going to keep him for as long as you can.
Yeah, and so I guess maybe I didn't see what Vetus said, but I think if he knew he was safe on that first vote, maybe this is exactly what he said that you were referencing on Twitter. Once he makes that first vote, he's got to feel really good. Once he makes it through that first vote, much more so than, because exactly like what we've been saying, which is if he's going to get voted out, they're going to do it the first time rather than the second time. It's going to be better to have done it the first time.
Yeah, and one thing that keeps eating me here is that if you look at who gets the, you know, who gets the first reaction to the whole Laura B debacle, and who gets to, you know, articulate the concerns of the Alliance and the audience, once again, it's Monica. Yeah, everything gets filtered through her perspective. We always get to hear insight from her, and it's, you know, it's starting to sound like a broken record now, but again, it's like literally this is happening every single week now, and it's, you know, it's only getting more and more concerning.
Yeah, I think we're going to talk a lot more about this and Monica in general as we talk about, spoiler alert, our winner picks. But for now, let's talk about, I think, the vote, which is, what are your considerations here now? Obviously, I think if it's Vetus who was safe after the last vote, Laura B is going to be pretty much the obvious vote. And when I was rewatching this episode to do my notes for this podcast, and I had that kind of mindset in mind, where that mentality in mind, where this whole initial even plan of voting Vetus was just bullshit to Laura B to make her feel better, there was it stood out that there was some very tricky editing. Particularly, there was a scene with Tina and Vetus in the water where it was clearly overdubbed. Like, Tina would speak well after the sentence on the screen was, like, and the audio was done. It was clearly not actually taken from the scene they were showing. So I guess I'll ask you the first question then. Booting Laura B here, given that you didn't boot Vetus last time, correct move?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a difference of some sort between Kat and Laura B, where obviously Laura B is getting voted out here, at least if we buy what the editing is showing us, because she makes this irrational decision and is spewing information everywhere. But I feel like that's more of like a first-timer's mistake that you can take her aside and correct and just make sure that she knows what's going on. Whereas with Kat, there's nothing you can do that is going to make Kat some kind of like secure, confident partner for you. So I think Laura B is a far more attractive person to drag along as an easy vote and as an easy goat, if that's how you're so inclined, than Kat would be. So, you know, I don't think you can say, well, you kept her before, so yeah. So I don't think you can say, oh, well, you kept him before, so why not keep him now? One consideration that we didn't touch on last week, and I think everything we said last week still applies, is they have to know that they're merging soon, and so, you know, someone's coming off Redemption Island. If you send Vetus there, it's certainly possible, and I would say likely, that he's just going to win his way back. And if you're voting him out because he's a threat, he's going to be even more of a threat to you when he's uncontained and he has no reason to trust you anymore.
Yeah, and this is a concern that I hadn't even had until you presented to me shortly before we recorded today. And I think it's a very great concern, which is, I think, honestly, as recently as the previous round, the round where Kat got voted off, I would have been very concerned if I was in Tina's spot that a merge was coming the upcoming round. And for that reason, not only because of any potential pregame alliance I had with Aris and potentially Jervis that we heard so much about, I would have been very inclined to keep Vetus either way there.
Yeah. Going back to the Kat decision last week, as you said before when we discussed it a few weeks ago, you know, while Kat may have been a somewhat loyal alliance member for Tina, she's a much more loyal alliance member for Hayden. And so when the two of them are reunited at the merge, she's just going to go right back to him. And so, and you know, for Tina, like, Hayden is someone who she's had no contact with in this game so far. They've been on opposite tribes both times, and Hayden's someone who, just out of context and by that logic, is one of the biggest threats to her. So doing anything to weaken him is going to be a bonus.
Yeah, and, well, I think there's a balance to strike there, and you'd really have to wait when you're booting Kat. If you leave Kat in, yes, I think it's very reasonable to expect you're just giving Hayden two votes. But Hayden is someone, I think, if you're Tina, is someone who's good to have in the game, because he's also a former winner. He's also got a big bank account by that same principle. And he's also very good at the game, and people know that. And he's physically fit, and he's a young dude. And by that logic, he's always going to be a bigger buffer than you. So you have to wait giving him two votes versus him being there as a buffer. But he's going to be a buffer either way.
Yeah, but I feel like there's no shortage of potential buffers for Tina, and there are buffers for her that she might be more inclined to align with. So, you know, Aris, Vetus, Tyson and Jervis, maybe. You know, she doesn't need Hayden there in that role, especially since she hasn't had a chance to actually interact with him in any way yet, you know. Even if there's a chance that they might have some kind of understanding as both former winners, you know, you can't really rely on that when he's been kind of like, you can't rely on that when he's been with other people for the past, 17, 18 days, and you haven't had a chance to speak to him yet.
Yeah, I totally buy that, especially when there's that old adage that, you know, you can make all the pregame alliances you want, none of them matter when you hit the island. And I think that's definitely something that Tina has to be concerned about.
Yeah, and as if to confirm that, it's worth bringing it up now. Jervis, in one of his secret scenes this week, and it's actually pretty good as far as Jervis' secret scenes go, he said that he's always trying to make sure he has this There's plan B in place in case something falls through. And he said that that's been working out very well for him so far. One of the most telling lines from that was he said, quote, "That whole Geelong alliance is dead and gone to me." And he spoke about ours in terms which, you know, seemed to confirm that he's on board with Tyson's plan. So even if there was some kind of pre-game alliance between the two of them, it doesn't seem to be in place anymore. At least it's been thrown out the window.
That's very interesting. And kind of going back to what you were saying about Tina having no shortage of buffers, I think you actually make a very, very good point there, which is she can do, you know, however loyal she wants to be to Aris because of their time on original red team, or excuse me, original yellow team, you know, the returnees tribe, whichever one they were, and because of whatever pregame alliance they had, I think could definitely be outweighed, first of all, by that lack of contact she's had the last several rounds with Aris, and also because I'm totally fine if I'm in Tina's spot slaughtering goats. Like we saw, I think Ceree Fields basically created the concept and mastered it in Season 12, where if you're Tina, there is no shortage of buffers for you going forward, just even physically speaking, let alone bank accounts. And I think Tina is very fine if she's going to be leaving Vetus in, even without any kind of pregame alliance or loyalty to Aris whatsoever, just to leave in one more person that's going to be a bigger threat than her. And slaughtering goats is a completely legitimate tactic in the form of Cat and Laura B, in my mind. Yeah, so I think we're good to get into next time on Survivor, and it's made abundantly clear in the previews that next time on Survivor we're going to merge, which is very exciting. And Dom, I know every season this is something we love talking about. And so let's look forward to this merge now and look and talk about, you know, some permutations that we've been thinking about as far as groups coming together. I think that we have a ton to get into. Where do you even want to start?
Yeah, merge episode is always very exciting. Even in seasons which are otherwise kind of lackluster, the merge episode is almost always the high point. The only bad one I can think of in recent memory would be like the One World merge episode, but, you know, that's kind of in keeping with the rest of the season there. but yeah, in general, it's, you know, this is the most exciting episode of the season, and for us as people who like the game and the strategy of it, this is the most like deep and complex time usually. So yeah, let's get into some of this. I think one of the things we have to be aware of this season, and I'm actually kind of glad that it's a factor now, is the identity of the person who comes back from Adventure Island is actually going to matter this time. You know, if we think about in the past two seasons when this was tried, you had two even sides who weren't really willing to budge, and both of them just wanted to begong the other. There was no real room for someone to come in and trick things up at all. Here, though, there's this much more fluid dynamic in place, and so, you know, it's actually going to be of great importance, I think, whether it's, you know, Laura Morant or John or Laura B, but you don't have to think about that.
Let's rule out Laura B just right off the bat, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah, just given the challenge we've seen, there's no chance. And honestly, Dom, I'll tell you right now, first of all, I want to tell the people who are unaware so far, Jeff Probst said in an interview this week with Dalton Ross that the two people who lose on Redemption Island this week, the winner is going to return to the game. The two people who lose are out for good, which means Redemption Island's either done or it's going to reset. I imagine it's going to reset, which is fucking stupid, but but whatever, what can you do? I'll tell you right now, though, I think there's very little chance that the returnee is... there's no chance it's Laura B, given the hang-on-the-pole challenge. I don't think it's going to be John either. I think it is the lock of the decade that Laura Moret is the returnee.
Yeah, can you elaborate on that? Because, I mean, I agree that given the three people that are there, she's the most interesting one to come back. But, you know, if they were drawing this up before the season, you know, Laura Moret coming back after being voted out two episodes ago isn't really a compelling storyline.
No, it's not. But Laura Moret and Sierra is. And that is a storyline we heard a lot about, like, nonstop when both of them were in the game. And I think there's got to be something that transpires. Like I've been saying for weeks now, as soon as Laura Moret got voted out, I said, either Laura Moret's coming back or Sierra's getting voted out. And there's no time for Sierra now left to be getting voted out. And that's why I say Laura Moret has got to be the one coming back. As much as I would love for it to be John, by the way, I think John would be a fantastic returnee. But, Dom, let's get into why you are saying, and I totally agree, by the way, why you're saying that it matters that the returnee comes back. Because there are going to be 10 people left at plus the returnee. And I imagine that means you've got him in two groups of five. So fill me in.
Yeah, and it's very important that the returnee is coming back to make it an odd number, because if they're coming back to make it like 6-4 or whatever, then there's no real use for that person at that point, and they can just be discarded when they're no longer useful.
Here, though, as in immediately, by the way, they could.
Yeah, I mean that's the best in here. Here though, when you have these two very evenly mapped sides, whoever comes back is actually going to be a swing vote here, and they really get to determine the course the game takes from here. So I think a lot of people are assuming that you know, Laura got burned by Aras, Tyson wants to vote out Aras, Sierra seems to be in that alliance, so, you know, Tyson's group has 5, Laura coming back makes it 6, 6 out of 11 is a majority, and they can ride it from there.
Yeah, so let's talk about this Tyson group, which is, by my count, we've got Tyson and Jervis, of course, and then the rest of the people on the Red Tribe, who all of whom, with the exception of Sierra, whose loved one is still on Redemption Island, but Hayden and Caleb have both, their loved ones are out of the game, they're free agents, and we've had this kind of love triangle alliance of Hayden, Caleb, and Sierra. Excuse me. And I think that's a very reasonable assumption to think that they're going to hang out with Tyson, especially when it gives them at least half of the field, especially after the fact of what I believe to be pretty much a fact of Laura Moret coming back and that then being 6. And the other side we have then, just by process of elimination before we get into this Tyson side, being Tina, Katie, Monica, and Aris and Vetus.
Okay, so here's why I take issue with that. And I agree that, you know, it might still be the most likely scenario, and we're going to see an Aris boot next Wednesday, and it's going to go from there. I think there are some causes out there. I think there are some reasons to doubt that, though. The first one is, this group that Tyson's got together, sure, you know, they're saying good things about it now, but it hasn't been tested in any real way yet. You know, that one of the downsides of not losing at any point is that you don't get, you know, you're not sent to an arena where you get to, like, see whether that alliance is actually firm or not. The first time they're going to have to see if that's really in place is at the merge, where it's a lot more chaotic than it is at some random tribal council pre-merge. And so I can easily see, you know, like Sierra or Caleb or whoever getting swept up in that and being fed some way or some reason to deviate from that alliance.
I totally see what you're saying, and I think it's very valid. And I can honestly see any one of or all three of Hayden and Sierra and Caleb going over to that other side just if there's some kind of compelling offer. But I got to ask, do you feel like they would then just be walking into the danger zone where they're going into now a majority alliance that after they get a couple of boots has no incentive to keep them and there's nothing they can do about it?
Possibly, but I don't think that other group that they'd be joining is really set in stone either. I think there's a lot of room for them as a group and individually to try and make things happen once that Tyson group's been pared down a bit.
Right, and I think it would have to be pared down, Tyson probably being the first one, and then potentially Jervis, if the other three are all going. And then, you know, if the other three being Hayden, Sierra, and Caleb are all flipping back over. But I think at that point, honestly, this may be a compelling option because you've still got Aris and Vetus there, and those two make a really threatening duo. And I could easily see those three either teaming up with Aris and Vetus and then making this new majority, or them being very easy to pitch as the people we need to get rid of immediately.
Keep in mind that if they do flip over and join the other side, within that new group then, there'd still be this original set of 5 people from the Loved Ones tribe, where you have Hayden, Caleb, and Sierra, but also Katie and Vetus. And so, you know, that could fairly easily reform, I think, if they needed to.
Well, let's get into this a little bit then, because that is the one group that we have split apart in this main 5-5 potential dynamic, where we have Hayden, Caleb, and Sierra on one side, and Katie and Vetus, you know, they got separated at the swap from their original Loved Ones tribe. How strong do you think that bond is going to be? How much do you see that coming into play?
I mean, we saw Katie being nominally willing to vote out Vetus, and maybe that time apart where, you know, the two of them are on one tribe and the other three are on the other, that might separate them a bit. But I think, you know, Sierra still harbors this desire to play with Katie and vice versa. I think Hayden and Caleb seem to have a good thing going on beforehand. When we had the swap, Caleb seemed to be in a position of power, or at least as he saw it, at least. And Caleb seemed to be in a position of power, at least as he saw it. And so I think that's a perfectly realistic thing, especially since a lot of them don't really have people tying them to other alliances anymore, right? The whole premise behind the Tyson group is that none of them have their loved ones left, and so they can afford to be closely bound to each other. Yeah, so Hayden's loved one is gone. Sierra's, I mean, I guess technically she's on Redemption Island, and we're assuming she's coming back, so she doesn't really count. But Caleb's loved one's gone. You know, and I think Katie will follow Tina's wishes, but I think Vetus is very independent-minded. So, yeah, I can easily see them, if not being some kind of formal group, at least working together in the short term.
Yeah, I gotta say, I can't believe how happy I am that this very fluid merge dynamic that we've said so much about actually came in. I think there's going to be so much room to play. And one thing I've actually been totally just spacing on in thinking about the possibility of this threesome of Hayden, Caleb, and Sierra flipping over is the fact that, like you said, we're imagining, obviously, at least, you know, one loved one will come back in. And if we're imagining that's Laura Moret, do you think she's definitely doing what Sierra is doing, or is she definitely just going against Aris?
Well, normally I would have thought that Sierra's going to do whatever Laura Moret wants to do, but now I'm thinking it might actually be the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Because Sierra, in one of her secret scenes, said she's actually in two minds about whether she wants her mom to come back, just because she's aware that having her there, as much as she wants to play the game with her, it makes things so much more complicated. You know, they have to, if there's a disagreement between the two of them about how to vote or who to trust, you know, that's going to be very hard to resolve. And so it's just much simpler for everyone involved if the two of them are separate. So, you know, maybe if Laura Moret does come back in, that's, you know, all that's going to fade away and they'll be very tight again. And I can see that happening. I will take issue with one thing you said, though. I don't think Laura Moret is a lot to want to work against Aris, because firstly, yeah, okay, he voted her out, but she must have seen something in him originally that drew her to him. And so I think he can draw on those qualities again to get him back in her good graces. Secondly, I think he can maybe feed her some line about the reason that she was voted out, or say that it wasn't entirely his decision, or maybe present it as something which was agreed by other people and he kind of had to go along with it. I don't think she necessarily associates all of that with him at the moment. Maybe she does, but yeah, I think there's a chance he can dissuade her there. Also, I think if Aris and Tina are as tight as we're suggesting they are, then Tina could have a very important role to play here, because I think Tina could go to Laura and say, look, I understand that you distrust Aris and by extension Vesis, but mathematically, you know, this is our last chance to break up the other group. If we don't do it now, then, you know, sure, we've broken up Aris and Vesis, but then we're just going to get picked off one by one. If we break them up now, I promise you that we can work together later to take out the two brothers. And I think that would be a very natural alliance, actually. You'd have Tina and Katie and Laura and Sierra. Katie and Sierra, obviously, the best of friends. Tina's very smart, is able to get this kind of group together. And I think Laura would want to go along with that. You know, they can bring in Monica as a fifth if they need to. I think that's something which could very easily happen.
Yeah, so I guess basically what, in this timeline, it would be if Aris and Vesis, you know, are necessary votes for this round, but we're going to be able to get rid of them later. So this would be the three loved ones coming together, the three pairs of loved ones coming together, plus Monica?
Yeah, I guess so. Although Tina could keep her options open. If she, for some reason, wants to go with Aris and Vesis later on, she can make that happen if she wants to. I don't see any reason why she would, other than, you know, maybe their friendship in real life is much closer than we thought it was. But yeah, Tina, this is why I said earlier, I think Tina's in a fantastic position right now. She might not be in the majority alliance yet, but she has a lot of lines where she can make that happen.
Yeah, oh, I absolutely agree. And not only can she make that happen, I think she has a lot of lines where she can find she and Katie in a very solid group of four, like we touched on last week, where then they have a very good chance of one of them winning, or at least a guarantee of one of them making the end.
Sure. I mean, alternatively, think about this scenario. Let's say Laura Moret does go with Tyson's group. Okay, they vote off Aris, and then presumably Vesis would be the next to go. At that point, they're at the final nine, and there are five women and the four guys, and it would be very easy and natural for the women to come together and just knock off the guys in order.
Tom, stop thinking about women's alliances.
I agree that it's a kind of like overblown thing in general, but here, though, it would make sense for all of them, and I think most of them are savvy enough to make it happen.
I very much agree, and not only is it they're savvy enough to do it, I think it would be a very fine play on their part, but let me ask you, Aris and Vesis, I think that honestly makes a lot of sense if they're the next two to go and they're the first people to stack up on the new Redemption Island.
So you think that could be the resolution to this brotherly rivalry that they've been building up all this time?
I think it's very well within the realm of possibility, and that would very much coincide with this group of five, these two groups of five.
I can see that. At the same time, though, Aris and Vesis have been two of the biggest counters this season. I don't think they would want the two of them to go out in order right after the merge, where of the people left in the actual game, we wouldn't really have reason to be personally invested in any one of them.
I'm trying to think of, and this will definitely speak to your point, because I can't think of any yet, and I'm just prolonging the sentence to try to kill time before I can think of them, where someone goes out at the merge, and then the immediate next boot is also someone who was a big character.
Yeah, I mean, no obvious example spring to mind. I guess like Alina and Marty, but that's you can't really draw.
I would struggle to say Alina. That's probably the closest thing that I could at least think of. Apart from like heroes versus villains, where it's obviously going to be big characters.
Yeah, like insofar as Amanda's a big character, yeah. But yeah, I think you're right there. Like, you don't, if the point that the season's been building towards so far is this dramatic blindside at the merge, then you want the fallout from that to be something which really keeps the audience engaged. And I don't think that's going to be the case as long as you don't have anyone there that they really can care about.
Well, I think let's expand on this principle for a little bit, because I've never thought about this. But I think we're definitely going to have a pretty big character fall at the merge in the form of either Aris or maybe Vetus or maybe Laura M or maybe Tyson. Who knows? Maybe Monica. Maybe that's what we're getting out of Monica. And again, more Monica coming. I don't think that's very likely out of Monica. But I think, honestly, that kind of pigeonholes very few people into the second merge boot realm of possibility. Like, Jervis and maybe Hayden and maybe Caleb make sense and maybe Katie makes sense, but no one else really makes sense.
Yeah, I think Hayden's someone who, within the game, his being voted out would be seen as a big event, but to the audience, given how he's been portrayed thus far, it would just be like another vote out. So yeah, that would make a lot of sense, actually, if he was like a second or third juror, maybe.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I'm thinking, which would mean probably bad things for Tyson coming this next episode.
Yeah, it's interesting because Tyson, our friend AJ Van Gild has said that on one of his earlier appearances with Cessnino, Tyson said that he appreciates, and this was way before him coming back was ever more than like a hypothetical thing. He said that if he were to come back, he understands that he's just too big a threat. Like, he can't rely on being nice to people and getting himself to the end that way. He's going to have to get himself in a group where he can just win his way to the end once that target starts to fall on him. And so that's kind of at odds with what he's doing now, actually, where it's like he's aligning with a lot of the physically strong guys. Although maybe that's his goal in taking out Aris and, I guess, Vetus as well, where, I mean, the two of them are very good at challenges.
Right. You could say, he obviously has to be concerned about Aris, who could, at least if Tyson has seen Aris's original season and seen him hang with Terry Dietz, I think Tyson would have very real reason to be concerned. Obviously, I wouldn't be concerned about Jervis, wouldn't be very concerned about Caleb, and no offense intended, I wouldn't be really concerned about any of the women. Hayden would be someone who would concern me, Vetus would concern me, and Aris would very much concern me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think Aris is definitely someone who, the sooner he goes out, the more comfortable Tyson can feel. Yeah, so one thing I'm very curious to hear what you have to say about is the level of certainty you have about Aris and Vetus actually coming together, because I think there's a very real chance, at least, very much non-zero at least, that they don't end up working together at post-merge.
Okay, can you explain what you think that chance is? Because, I mean, I might be inclined to agree with you if you had said before the game, Aris and Vetus won't necessarily work together. At the moment, though, you know, Vetus is in one alliance, and the other alliance is gunning for Tyson. And the other alliance is gunning for Aris. So I'm not sure they really have a choice but to work together.
Okay. I certainly understand that logic. I just feel like it's not a guarantee. And I will say, to kind of expand on how real I think that possibility is, I think it's extremely low.
Okay, so you think they're pretty likely to work together?
Yeah, though. Overwhelmingly likely to work together.
As most of us would have thought, I assume. Okay, yeah. So what do we want to get on to next, do you think?
Well, let's talk about what they could do, Aris and Vetus, now.
Okay, because the scenarios we've been running through so far, most of them would logically involve Aris going first and then Vetus going if Aris goes. But as we said, editing-wise, that wouldn't really make sense so far. So we have to think, what would have to happen so that Aris goes but Vetus lives? And I think, you know, this whole beef that Tyson has with Aris, it is exclusively with Aris, right? You know, he has no reason to distrust Vetus yet. And so once Aris is gone and the threat of them as a pair is broken up, I could easily see, especially if Hayden and Caleb and Sierra are all vouching for Vetus, I could see him being brought in. And if Tyson is cognizant of the threat that the women pose if they have the numbers at Final Nine, then, you know, he needs then he needs Vetus on his side then if he's going to survive that.
Yeah, I guess depending on which way Vetus goes, if Aris is in fact the merge boot, we could see some combination of either Aris Katie or Aris Hayden or Aris Caleb, I think, as the follow-up boot, just because I feel like they're the only real ones that fit into that mold, or maybe Aris Jervis, but I feel like that's very unlikely for Vetus to go one way and then the other.
Yeah, I don't think there's a very easily definable second juror edit or something like that. I think it makes more sense to say who it couldn't be, just given what we've seen of them at this point. So, like, I can say, you know, Arsene Vegas seems unlikely, but Arsene, almost whoever else, would be a possibility.
Well, I feel like in this season, much more so than many others, there are a lot of people that I would say are ruled out from that second juror edit, such as Tyson or Sierra, or at this point I would say Tina or Monica or Vetus.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I can see it. Could it be Tina, though? Because
maybe Laura, maybe she comes back and is useful for one vote and then goes.
That would be kind of funny, yeah. I can definitely see that.
Yeah, so I think kind of wrapping up on this merge, I guess let's get your picks locked in for who you have returning and who you have getting voted out of the merge.
Yeah, I have Laura Moret returning, as I think you and pretty much everyone else does. If John were to return, having won, it would have been, what, 5 jewels at that point?
Yeah.
They would have shown at least something of him on Redemption Island other than when he was actually in the arena, right? Because we've had absolutely nothing from Redemption Island so far since that scene with him and Candace way back when. Like, when Ozzy was there, for instance, or Matt Elwood was there, we had his content every single episode, but here we've just had nothing, so I don't think it makes sense for him to come back. As for who's getting voted out, I really want to hedge my bets here and say it's going to be either Arsene or Tyson, and I think that's what I'm going to do. I think...
Pick one, dude. That's like 90% likely.
Yeah, okay, if I have to call my shot, I'll say... I don't know. I see Tyson having some dramatic... but I'm not sure it's going to happen this quickly. Like, I can easily see, let's say this goes through, and all this power goes to his head, and then he makes some blunder or whatever, or he gets taken down. I see that being very likely, and so for that reason, I think I'm going to go with Aris as the merge boot.
Yeah, Omar coming, Aris. That's my pick, and I have Laura Brett locked in. Let's talk about our updated winner picks now. We've obviously had a lot out of Hayden recently, a lot out of Tina recently. Is that changing anything for you?
No, not really, because if these are going to be more than just temporary storylines where, you know, they get out of time because they have to, then you'd expect them to have some kind of content early, right? You need to hook, if these people are going to be important long term, you need to hook viewers right away and make sure they know who they are. And they didn't do that with Hayden, they didn't do that with Tina. So I can see them maybe popping up occasionally in the next few episodes, but then I imagine they're going to get booted and most viewers won't really care, and that's going to be the intention.
Well, maybe, and just maybe, and I think you're absolutely right, but I think maybe, Dom, maybe, that they're assuming, hey, Hayden and Tina are both former winners. People are going to be much more likely to know who they are than other people.
I think you give the audience far too much credit there.
Maybe. All right.
Even for the subset of the audience who did see Australia and who remembers who Tina is, are they going to really have a reaction to the outcome beyond, oh, Tina got voted out, that's blank, you know, fill in the blank here. I don't think it's going to be meaningful for them.
Yeah, no, I definitely see what you're saying there. I think it's very unlikely that either of them is the realistic winner, but I think they are on the bottom. Like, I know you never give these people any credit, but I would give them in the, you know, like, each of them like 5% or something, which never ever comes in, so don't listen to me.
I mean, if I was taking a snapshot of the game at this point and saying who has the most win equity or whatever, I'd say Tina would be right up there. But again, like, we haven't seen that on screen, and so we can't trust in that as viewers of the show.
I completely agree. I think that is the perfect way of putting it. If we were out there in real time, I would very much still have both Tina and Hayden high on my winner of rankings. But just because of the edit, I don't. So let's get into the people that we do have on our winner rankings. And I want to start, someone, I know we teased this a couple of times, I want to start with Monica.
Yeah, now Monica is the exact opposite of those. She's someone who, game logic-wise, is in a fairly unremarkable spot. But based on the editing, she has just received this incredibly careful and layered treatment. And it's, you know, it's so consistent and so thorough that it makes you wonder why they would be doing this if she weren't going to win. Now, there's been one theory that I've heard suggested by Pia Virolainen. And I think it's actually, I don't know how plausible it is, but I really like it and I want to believe that it's true. So if you think back to the pregame interviews, Monica and Brad said in one of them that, you know, one approach they might take would be, if they make it to the end, they might say, well, we already have the money, we're going to ask the jury to give it to someone more deserving. And let's say this were to happen, how would you edit someone who was making that kind of sacrifice without making them look more deserving than the winner? Well, you'd build up them, but you'd also build up the winner alongside that, so that it would seem like a win-win for both of them. And this would also be consistent with something that Jeff Probst has been touting over and over again, in what little hype he's been building for the season, he always says that there's this one big moment that's never happened before, this one thing that's completely unprecedented, and that would certainly qualify for that.
I had not heard anything about that from Jeff Probst, but I did see this theory from PL on Twitter, and this blew my mind. I think this could be absolutely spot on. I think this makes so much sense, and it absolutely, like, I feel like my eyes are wide open now, and I am not only thinking this could happen, I'm thinking this will happen.
Well, no, okay, I think this is likely to turn out to be fan fiction, but it's fan fiction that I want to believe that it's true, and therefore it is true, because that's how reality works.
What else could they possibly be doing with so much Monica? She's not, at, like,
showing
either
she
winner. Wins or I, this happens, and I just don't yeah. feel like she wins.
See, okay, the Monica that I know from One World does not seem like a plausible winner of Survivor. But then, you know, Jenna Maraska did and Fabio didn't. There have been more improbable winners of this game before. And I don't think it's safe to discount Monica on those grounds.
Okay, I totally bought this when I saw this. I am in love with this theory. And I honestly can't wait if this does happen. Although I will say, in my view, and this is going to sound like totally just me speaking 180 degrees from what I just said, I don't like that this happens, but I can't wait for it to happen on this season because I view this as kind of like a Survivor spinoff. I don't like in general because I could very much see this being Monica basically just playing Kingmaker at the end and not doing what's in her own best interest because she wants to see the people she likes win.
Yeah, you don't want to have another Shoko just like dictating everything according to her own personal preference.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in that respect, it would be somewhat bullshit in my mind, and they shouldn't do it. But I think this would be obviously completely unprecedented. I think this would be ridiculous. I think this would be good on Monica in some sense because I think she kind of knows she's not going to win anyway. Like, can Monica really win Survivor? I don't think so.
Well, again, you know, can Jenna Maraska really win Survivor? Yes, apparently, but I...
Well, the thing is, it's a lot one would imagine. I guess what I take issue with is, I imagine Monica, if she does in fact do this, knew she was going to do this from the start, as did Brad. And in that sense, I don't like people going out there playing not to win. But I'd certainly prefer it to her taking the line of, if you vote for me, we'll give it to charity.
Yeah, I mean, one piece of evidence against this is if you look at Monica's secret scene from this week, she's talking about the game and thinking about jury votes and stuff in very kind of involved terms, which implies that she really does have a head in the game. She's kind of calculating everything through and that she wants to win this, which, let's be honest, is the most simple and the most likely outcome. But I really want this to be true, just like you.
All right, I think the next place we want to go now in looking at winners is if he does manage to survive this merge, which I think, you know, we both obviously picked him to go down at the merge. Aris, what are you thinking about him?
Yeah, I mean, if Aris survives the merge episode, then his equity just skyrockets significantly because it would mean that this whole storyline has been building to Aris defeating Tyson and that everything we've been saying about Aris being shown as overconfident or as unaware turns out to be false and that he's able to overcome that. And so if that happens, then, you know, he has to be right back in people's winner rankings, I think.
I would say, especially, I don't know if I could still even, because presumably if Aris survives, Vetus will have had something to do with that and Vetus will have had a good episode. I would have Aris and Vetus back again as having the majority of the equity if Aris manages to survive this episode.
Sure.
So let's get into, who else do you have up there besides Vetus, if anyone? Tyson, let's talk about Tyson before we get into Vetus, because I think Vetus is the consensus number one still, but I think Tyson has had a very interesting past couple of episodes, so where do you want to start here?
Yeah, this one's weird, because it's hard to tell how they would edit Tyson if Tyson were to be in the game, because he's just such an odd character, and that's why they keep bringing him back, because he's so unique and he always delivers. But I just, it's so hard to firstly see him winning the game just by itself, just given who Tyson is. And also to see him winning the game given the edit that he's got. Now, you know, when we spoke to Stephen Fishback, he said that on Talking Teens, Tyson was overwhelmingly popular out there. If he had made it to the finals, it would have been a round against pretty much anyone. And they had to take him out when they did because they just couldn't risk that happening. So, you know, I could see if he makes it there with the right people, like maybe Jervis and someone else or whatever, then he could have a shot there. It's just so hard for me to visualize that, though.
Yeah, and it really... It's because of this weird Tyson edit that we've been getting all season where we get some classic Tyson where he's off doing whatever skullduggery he's into, and some emotional Tyson and some strategic Tyson, which are completely new facets of his personality that we've yet to see before, that this is really a question for me. As we heard from Steven, Tyson is overwhelmingly popular in general and such a sociable guy. I just, like you, have such a hard time seeing him win, and I feel like because of that edit that we've been talking about, it has to be a consideration at this point.
Yeah, I just feel like his edit's been so all over the place. Like, that first episode, he has that great scene where he's tending the fire and showing them what Rob told him in Samoa, but then he just kind of drops off the map, and then he pops back up again to talk about Rachel leaving, because he has to, because he's Rachel's boyfriend, and then he's nowhere to be seen, and now he resurfaces, but his whole storyline now is just about Aris, and, you know, everything is about getting out Aris, and there's nothing, doesn't seem to be anything more long-term than that. We've seen his bond with Jervis, and that's developing, and actually, as loath as I am to admit it, it's actually a good point that despite this pre-game alliance between Aris and Jervis, Tyson seems to have been able to lure Jervis away from Aris, so that's something that he does have going for him. But I don't feel like it has a kind of long-term legs that you'd expect from someone who's being portrayed as a winner.
Okay, I think, first of all, if Tyson is to go on to succeed, it's because Jervis is there with him. I think Jervis's success is also entirely dependent on Aris succeeding. I think those two are a package deal. I guess it's just we've seen so much of Tyson from so many different angles that I can't help but have him pretty high up on my list right now.
Right, but what we've seen of Tyson hasn't been spread out with any kind of evenness or consistency. It's been when Tyson is a part of the story, he pops up, and then when he isn't, he just dies down again. And that's, you know, so you can very easily forget about him when he's not immediately relevant, and that's not something you usually look for as a winner.
Yeah, well, you know who has not had that same criticism is Vetus.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
So let's get into him.
He has kind of, because some people said that in the Brad Boot episode where Caleb flipped everything around at the last minute, Vetus didn't get a chance to really have any insight there. I think that's a completely spurious criticism. Like, you know, I'm not sure what they could do to make Vetus seem important there. The best they can do is show him reacting to it after the fact, which they did. So I think his bases are covered there.
Yeah, Vetus has certainly been captivating to me. Now, as I mentioned before, he goes way down for me just because Aris got that same shot that's usually reserved for the winners. And I'm not even exaggerating that he's going, like, I probably had Vetus at 75% as of last time. And I know I said he was the lock winner until further notice. Here's your further notice. He's no longer the lock winner. And I know that was a short-lived lock.
Okay. But one thing that's worth remembering is that we've had repeated references to Aris and Vetus as a pair doing well. Like, Laura Bonham, as, you know, not someone you would expect to be this reliable narrator, has said Aris and Vetus could take this whole game. And I think that could easily prove to be prophetic if that does end up happening.
Yeah, and it's certainly something I think, much like Tyson and Jervis, if one of them's succeeding, it's because the other one is also succeeding. Although, I guess I would add the caveat, unless Aris goes out right at the merge, I could still then see Vetus doing well. But I think Aris's success is entirely dependent on Vetus.
Yeah, and that's why I think Vetus has to be higher than Aris, even leaving everything else aside. Like,
yeah,
he's not dependent on Aris, Aris is dependent on him.
Yeah, so where do you have Vetus right now if you had to assign a percentage?
See, I'm not sure whether to put him above or below Monica. I'm really not. I'm torn about
that. Wow.
And, well, why do you...
I just don't see her winning. I don't know how else to put it.
Okay, she could easily be Lisa Weltall all over again, but...
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
Again, like, why would you elevate Monica as your big forefront character of the season unless you were forced to by circumstances?
And right, and I think it's circumstances. By circumstances.
Well, the only conceivable circumstances are this fabulous theory or her winning. And I think her winning, you know, by Occam's razor is just, like, the more easy outcome to focus on.
Okay, I would at least still have... As far as... I think it is more like... I agree with the Occam's razor in general. Okay, you know what? You swung me. Monica, I certainly don't have her above Vetus. I'll put it that way. I would say I have Vetus at 50%, Monica at 20%.
Okay, I think they're far closer than that. I might reverse those two percentages if I had to.
Wow.
I I know. I guess, again, this is just like my natural pessimism shining through. I want Vegas to win so badly that I'm just seeding myself for that not happening in advance. But, you know, I sincerely hope that I'm wrong about this. And, you know, maybe that's not a good sign and I should start to hope that I'm right instead, but who knows.
I would say I have Monica right around where I have Tyson.
No, I think Monica far outstrips Tyson, and it's not even close in my mind.
Okay. I guess I'm just totally buying into that theory. I love it. Even if it is fan fiction, I think that would be the greatest thing. Yeah. All right. Dom, anything else to add before we get out of here this week?
I think that about does it, unless you have anything else.
I sure don't. So, guys, everyone, thank you guys very much for listening. Subscribe on iTunes. We will be back with more Survivor next week with Jay Fisher. Dom, thank you very much. And that's going to do it. So until next week, take care, everybody.